You just have to keep going. You have to want it enough to wake up tomorrow and do the same thing over.
This was me being a hustler.
The only way that I've gotten to this point in my life is to try to treat people the way I want to be treated.
Welcome to Ground Zero Growth with your host, Sam Sapp, owner of Lockbaud.
Hello, everybody. I'm joined today with my guest, Zach Arend, keynote speaker and leadership coach. How are you doing today, Zach?
Good, Sam. Excited to be on here.
So how does one decide they want to be a leadership coach and keynote speaker?
That's a big question. You know, I spent a good decade in sales, and at a very young age, you know, right out of college, I'm going into these businesses, right? And I'm trying to get in front of the CEO or the business owner or the chief operating officer. I'm a 22-year-old kid that, you know, I don't know anything, you know, and I'm trying to persuade these business owners to buy my services. And very quickly, I realized I don't know how to talk to these people. Like, I don't know. I went to business school, but it just didn't translate. And so I found myself building a territory. I was with a logistics company down in Tulsa, Oklahoma, all by myself, building this territory. And my butt was on the line. I'm like, I've got to figure this out. I'm going to fail, you know? And I spent a lot of time at Barnes & Noble, grabbing books, reading The Toyota Way and Finance for Entrepreneurs. And I just, because I set out, I'm like, I need to learn the language. I need to think like these business owners. I need to be able to connect with them, because if I can't use their language, they're going to write me off. And that's where my journey started, is just diving into the world of books. I started reading and learning, and sales is a profession where every day you come face to face with your own opportunities to grow, if you will. Because people are constantly mirroring back to you how you're showing up. And it was a 3 to 5 year journey of just learning how to talk to people, which seems strange to say, but I didn't know how to talk to people. I grew up in a small town in the Midwest, and learning how to connect and all of those skills came from the repetitions out in the field, reading books, and then eventually leading sales teams. So my career took off, and now I'm a vice president of sales, and now I'm training salespeople. And so it's just like, you know, looking back in the rearview mirror, I can see a straight path to where I am today. But in the moment, it was just trying to learn and grow and be who I needed to be. But over the time, I found I had a real knack and passion for leadership development. And I got a coach. I started working with a coach when I was a vice president of sales. And it got me thinking, like, well, this is a profession. You can do this for a living. And so that's kind of what set me on a path of being a coach. And there's some other crucibles and some challenges along the way that kind of, life has a weird way of just kind of kicking in you in the direction, sometimes kicking and screaming. And so there's some stories there too, but it's hard to, that it took a long time, but looking back, it all makes sense why I'm doing what I'm doing today. But in the moment, it was just trying to, you know, figure out that next thing in my career.
You've given a lot to go off of already. So I'm trying to, I find it very relatable trying to decide how to connect with business owners from the perspective of, so my first, 10 years in business was largely tech. It was tech. It was engineering. It was easy enough to connect with individuals on the, have you tried turning it off and on again level. But then transitioning to sales and business, sales in particular, right? It's really interesting. I mean, your first layer is how to connect, and you might become best friends and they still might not buy from you, which, let's be honest, you don't get to eat that night, right? If you don't, they don't buy from you. So then it's like, how do we connect? But how do I also, for lack of any better term, steer the conversation, or at least make sure the conversation has an agenda? How do I keep the conversation from going off the rails?
Yeah.
So let's almost start with the book recommendation, because you mentioned Barnes & Noble. What is a book that you felt like really kind of catalyzed that process?
And as a leadership coach today, I realized, like, oh, I was doing the same thing when I was learning to sell all those years ago, and It was a book by Rob Jollis called Customer Centered Selling, I think it was called. My copy is like yellow orange pages and it's all dog-eared. It's an old book, but Rob Jollis, Customer Centered Selling, I'm pretty sure is what it's called. And that book really talks about the psychology of how people make decisions and how I'm paraphrasing, but the statistic I remember reading in the book is like 70% of people are in what he calls the awareness phase, meaning I'm aware I have a problem. I'm aware I need to make a change, but it's not a big enough challenge need for me to act on it. And so as a salesperson, you know, through the lens of this book, our job is to help them almost create some pain, not in a manipulative way, but actually just to help them see clearly what the real implications of not acting on some of these things that, you know, we can tolerate this stuff for years and decades. And a good salesperson helps people see the opportunity. And so that book really taught me how to bring people face to face with what the opportunities are in their organization through dialogue, through conversation, through asking questions, really digging and listening, which I find still today when I work with salespeople, they find it really challenging just to ask questions and truly listen, because we're trained to say what the company wants us to say, and we have our features and benefits, and we're supposed to make an introduction. I like didn't follow the book. Like I'd be in a meeting with somebody, I wouldn't introduce myself, I wouldn't give them my background. It was like, hi, I'm Zach, and I would get right into it. I'd be like, so tell me, how do you think about this, or what about? And I just was so curious, and I would just dig. And it was like people didn't even care. I wasn't checking the boxes of what a salesperson should do. We were like right there in the moment talking about their business, their challenges. And then it just was a natural segue into, you know what, can I make some recommendations? I think I have something here that might support. And they were just so open to hearing it because I had spent the first 20 minutes just listening to them, asking the questions that were kind of leading us to where the opportunities might be. So that's a long answer, but I learned all of that through Rob Jollis and his work. And that's what I do as a coach today. Now I'm talking to leaders. What's not working for you? What's getting in the way of your dreams and the desired outcomes in your business? It's the same thing. It's really helping people get in touch with what they desire and removing the obstacles so they can achieve what they want in their lives and their businesses. So long answer to your question, but
helpful. I like it. It resonates from the perspective of I think startup companies in like their first year of business have a superpower that they don't realize, which is you can go out, have no business plan, have nothing, and say, hey, so-and-so, you know, tell me about your problems, right? And then if you and a lot of people want to help out no matter what level, right? It's like, oh, you started your first year and, oh, you're looking to find out what problems accounting firms are having or during tax season or whatever, right? If you just show up with and start, to your point, asking questions and then say, hey, if I gave you a solution that fixed all these problems, would you buy it? You know, there's a lot of people, right, that are going to say yes. And it opens up more doors, that degree of curiosity, than just coming at it from the perspective of, hey, I've got this tool that's definitely going to fix your problem and you should just buy it.
Right. Yeah. 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 I think learning to ask questions because when I train salespeople, they hesitate asking the question because they say, well, what if they answer with something I don't know what they say? Like, I feel vulnerable if I ask a question and then they reply with something and then I don't know what they're talking about. Now I'm in trouble. I really help them see, like, that's your greatest gift, that we'll call it ignorance, that not knowing, that newbie, being the rookie, because I leveraged that. I'm like, and when I started my business several years ago, I leveraged it again. I'm like, I'm new at this. Help me understand. How does it work? How do you, you know, when I was selling logistics, like, how do you look at your shipping costs? Like, how does that impact your business? It wasn't a sales question. It was a genuine, like, I'm learning here. I want to be great at this. And I'm curious, how do you view your shipping expense? Or, you know, and because of where I was coming from when asking the question, a place of curiosity, I learned so much. I tell people, like, I got a master's degree in business by doing sales, going talking to all these companies, staying curious, but along the way was able to earn their business because of how I showed up. And I think we lose that. And even me, once I was 5 years into it, I started like, oh, yeah, I know what you're going to say. I know. Oh, here we go again. And I lost that beginner's mind. And I think it actually caused me to be less effective in what I did as a salesperson all those years ago.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. So to kind of rewind the clock a little bit, can you kind of tell me about what was Zach's first dream? I feel like right around the high school era is when, I mean, obviously we've got dreams as a kid, but this is the one where we have external voices that say, you can't be a ballerina astronaut. Are you going to go become a lawyer? Like, what are you going to do in college? What's going to be your career?
Yeah. My dream, I think, I want to say I was 14 years old. So growing up, I grew up with horses, was doing rodeos at a young age. I roped calves, team roping, you know, so I was all in all these events. And I remember I was like 14 years old. I was starting to get into the high school rodeo association, which is a whole thing. It's really cool. And I had a buddy named Travis. And I remember one day watching the saddle bronc riding event, which he was great at. And I remember watching him. And I had this moment of like, I want to do that. I want to do that, you know, and not only do it, but I want to do it like that guy. Like, I want to be good. I want to be a state, you know, I want to be a champion winning belt buckles. And then there's the national finals rodeo where you're this is the best of the best. Like, I looked up to those guys, admired the. So that was my dream. I mean, I dedicated so much of my all through high school, even part of college, like eat, sleep, and breathe rodeo, saddle bronc riding. And so that was the first dream, I would say, that really hooked me at a young age.
Would you say you achieved that dream? How far did you get?
Yeah.
Were you a professional rodeo
well,
guy? I don't even know, a cowboy?
You know, yeah. And
I don't even know what the term for
my wife tells me I talk a lot, so I'm trying to like take a breath and let you chime in too. But no.
Hey, I'm the interviewer. You're supposed to talk a lot.
Just talk.
Nobody wants to hear me.
Let it rip. So after, you know, kind of getting this, I want to do that. You know, the first thing I do is I go tell my mom, because mom and I went to all the rodeos, and also really appreciate my dad. Like, he was back home running. We owned a small town grocery store. Like, I didn't grow up on a ranch. I wasn't like a real cowboy. You know, I always felt like kind of an outsider. Like, well, I don't even really belong here in the rodeo arena. Like, all week I was stocking shelves at mom and dad's grocery store, you know, and that day I saw Travis, I told mom, like, that's what I want to do. And my mom, I love her. She went and talked Travis's dad to train me how to ride saddle broncs. And, you know, the first Saturday we go to Bruce's ranch. I hit the ground 20 times. And then the next Saturday I hit the ground 20 more times, like over and over again.
From a horse?
From a bronc. Yeah. Like, it's, there's okay. no way to like prepare for the real thing. You have to do the real thing. You have to get in the chute. Get on a wild horse, nod your head, and then figure it out. Yeah.
I kind of want to talk about that. I just, you know, Mike, I've only been on a horse once ever, and I don't even know if that even counts. I never rode it. And I still just remember thinking, wow, there's an animal this tall that I can get on top of. I hope I don't fall off.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a scenario where it's 20 some odd times the first day. What kind of, I mean, I guess you're younger, so you bounce back easier, but I mean, what kind of damage is that? Is it just hurt and that's it? Move on?
Well, when you're young, people joke like I was made of rubber, but I'm pretty flexible, so I would just bounce off the ground. But I was young, and yet that process of wanting to ride broncs, like it did not come naturally. I don't know why. Like, I grew up riding horses, but when I got on a bronc, I couldn't stay on for 3 seconds. I'd be on the ground, on my back, in the dirt. You know, and for 2 years, this is what's crazy. 2 years of working with Bruce, I broke my hand, ankle, collarbone, like all of that. For those 2 years, I never once made it to the 8-second buzzer. Like, so in other words, never once qualified for, like, every horse I got on, I'd hit the ground for 2 years. And I just stuck with it, though.
What determination, though.
and I eventually became two-time state champion. Those last 2 years of high school, something clicked in me, and I started finding my rhythm, and it really taught me that's how life goes. Like, to be great at anything, even business, growth is, like, we've got to learn to embrace the struggle. Like, that's where the growth happens. The growth happens. All those years of hitting the ground is what allowed me to have those clicks to finally find that rhythm and become state champion. Same thing was happening when I entered the sales career. Like, hundreds of doors slammed in my face, you know, and having
to
take
my... Do you still do that? I don't want
to
get too far off of it. Do you still ride rodeo ever?
No. It's been about 10 years since I've been on the back of a horse. Pretty much, I moved to the city and started working at UPS and then got into sales. And, you know, and then I bought a Brooks Brothers suit and had Allen Edmonds shoes. And it was like totally left that world and more into the executive world.
Well, if you ever decide to get back on, please let me know, because I've never been super intrigued at the notion of watching rodeo as much as right now hearing Zach say I couldn't qualify for the first 2 years, and then the last 2 years I was champ. Something all of a sudden, I don't know, it sounds like it'd be exciting to watch. So sorry.
It's exciting for me to think about doing, but then at the same time, I'm like, yeah, no. Like, my neck hurts because I slept on it wrong last night. Like, I'm now 40, and so it's so funny, like, how you injure yourself, like, walking down the sidewalk. Are you serious? Like, I slept on my arm wrong, and now I can't move my head. Like, how old am I?
This is a little bit too relatable, unfortunately, even in my 30s. So,
yeah.
So you went from that to sales. How the hell do you go from rodeo to sales? Somebody said, hey, you could sell something.
Yeah, well, I was working at UPS here in Lenexa, like the big facility off I-35, if your listeners are from Kansas City. And I started working there right during college. I quickly moved my way up to supervisor. I loved it. I love working in operations. I'm going to work at UPS the rest of my life. Like, it's a great gig. And I was working my way up to get promoted. And then right around the time I was about ready to graduate college, I applied for the promotion. Like, and everybody's telling me, like, you're a shoo-in, Zach. You know, like, it's happening for you. And I'm like, I'm set. Like, I didn't have a resume. Like, I didn't do any of the career search stuff. Well, I got declined. I'm about to graduate. I thought I knew what I was doing. And then UPS was like, yeah, you didn't pass the written exam or something. Something kind of like really political. Like, really? What does that even mean? And they couldn't tell me. Come to find out later, a guy that used to work there, we caught up years later. He's like, yeah, the inside scoop was they just felt like you were too much of an HR risk. I'm like, oh, well, that's nice. I probably was. Back then, I was pretty immature. But because of that, I didn't get the promotion. And, you know, because I'm an HR risk, I was like, well, then F that. I'm going somewhere else, you know? And that's when I just was like, well, I work for UPS, so let's look at shipping companies. You know, it made sense to me, and came across this organization in Parkville, Missouri, which I think you're close to. And it was, small logistics company. I think there's 30 people. And I submitted my resume, and then my phone rang 5 minutes later. 5 minutes later, they called and like, saw your resume come across. We're looking for salespeople. Let's do an interview. I'm like, absolutely, let's do an interview. And I remember their question. They's like, what leads you to believe you can do sales? Have you ever done sales before? I'm like, nope, never. And I just said, well, I can convince people to load 1,200 boxes in a UPS trailer when those semi-trailers get to 115 degrees. I think I can do sales. That's what I said. And so they're like, well, that was a confident answer. But the whole time I'm like, I don't know if I can be, I'd do sales either. I don't know. I don't have a job. Like, I have a job, but it's, it's kind of like the whole time I was selling, I didn't know it. But yeah, I don't even remember what you asked me, Sam, but that's, I don't know how we got here.
No, how you get from rodeo to, you know, it's funny too. I'm hearing grit, and I'm hearing that's what they saw as grit.
Yeah,
it's a fun core value we have over here, and we'll we'll hire on it too. And it is sometimes that interesting sort of like, you know, I don't know if you have the experience for this role, but something says you can do it. And I guarantee you, if you told them the story about falling off the horse 2 years and still jumping back on it, what compels that? And this will go directly into sales. What possesses someone to jump onto a horse 2 years in a row and keep falling down? And because I think we, especially in the business space, I feel like the number one struggle in my mind is it's like, when do I stop getting back up on the horse? Because like I'll contrast this with, so Harry's keynote speaker, just spoke with him recently. Yeah. He was a podcast episode and he talks about a scenario where he got into athletics to compete and he wasn't able to quite cut it in basketball. And he ended up doing long form track and he ended up succeeding at that. And that was what he really wanted to do. And he achieved his dream through that. And it's interesting to me because the question that always goes through my head is it's like, how many times do we get back up on the horse? And at what point, you know, maybe you had been trying for 10 years, right? You figured it out at the last two, but how did you know you were going to figure it out?
Yeah. Oh, you didn't. I think when you're young, there's something, I think grit really is critical. Like just because I'm kind of answering your question, but maybe in a roundabout way. It's just what's coming to my mind is you don't know. Like you just don't know what's going to work out. And it's a choice. And I wanted to ride Bronx. And I admired the people that rode Bronx. And it was just something that once you kind of go down the road and you've hit the ground 100 times, you're like, well, I've hit the ground 100 times. Why quit now? Right. Now at the same time, when we set out and started our careers, back at the bottom of a new mountain, I don't know what I really want to do. And one of my favorite books on this topic, Cal Newport wrote a book called Be So Good They Can't Ignore You. And what he says is we should not be following our passion at a young age when, you know, like that's a trap because a lot of times we have no idea what our passion is until we put in the 2 years of hitting the ground to where we build the strengths up to where we can stay on that Bronc for 8 seconds and feel the victory of that championship ride. And then the passion comes. The passion comes way later. And so Be So Good They Can't Ignore You, the title speaks for itself. It's like just commit to something. And I think that's what served me the most is making an internal commitment to not necessarily what I want to do, but who I want to be. I think that's more of the question that's drove me my whole life is, who do I want to be? I wanted to be that guy behind the chutes with the cool chaps and like the belt buckles and just those. They were like superheroes to me at a young age. But then as we grow up, I wanted to be that successful salesperson that just seemed to have the great family, time, money. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to get around some guys that just really, I admired them, not for their just material success, but just who they were as dads and husbands. And it's like, I want to be like that. So then I'd be like, well, what are they doing? Oh, they're doing sales. They're doing leadership. And so I immersed myself into like, okay, what do I need to do to become that? And I'm still doing it. Now I look up to speakers and coaches and I have always had people in my life that I look up to almost like heroes, which sounds strange that I'm a 40-year-old guy, but I'm still like, who are your heroes? And not that I'm trying to copy them, but they, by looking at people that inspire you, it informs a little bit of maybe what's calling you, you know? So you asked the question though, how do you know when to stop? Like if you hit the ground so many times, maybe, because that's the downside to grit is there's a lot of research to come out. It's like, yeah, well, grit, sometimes you need to just quit what you're doing because it's not working, you know, and grit yeah, kind of thing. And I think as I've gotten older, you know, we all learn more about ourselves as we get older because of all the repetitions, we learn so much about ourselves. And there comes a point I think we have to start listening to what is tugging on our hearts a little bit because I'm a vice president of sales, and I was not happy. Like, it wasn't what I really wanted to do. But God knows I wasn't going to tell anybody that. That'd be like career suicide. So I didn't want, I knew something was off. And I'm like, what's next? Like, where do I go from here? Like, I don't really want to be higher and be more, like, I don't know. And I was reading my journal, Sam, just recently, like going back through old journal entries. And for like a year, I was writing about how what I really want to do is coaching and leadership development. And then I would blame, like, if it wasn't for this job, or if it wasn't for all my obligations, my kids and I could be it was just like me ranting, you know, like a personal journal. And it's funny because life has a way of kind of kicking you, whether kicking or screaming or not, because I was a vice president of sales, and there came a day where at the country club over a glass of bourbon, I was basically told, Zach, you're a good soldier, but it's not the level of leadership this company needs. And just like that, I was demoted. A guy came in who'd been with the organization for 6 months. He's now vice president of sales. I'm demoted down to sales guy. I also, you know, because of the time and I put in, they gave me a nice little like a bonus, kind of like you're off the leadership team, but we're going to pay you out of the phantom stock early kind of thing. And that was the moment that kind of what gave me the kick in the butt to really ask the question, what do I really want to be doing? And that's when I set out on the path to be a coach. But looking back, I'm like, that wanted to happen way before it happened. Like I was already moving in that direction, but the whole time I was pretending like I was confused. Why isn't this VP of sales thing working for me? You know, why am I struggling so much? It's like, well, I wasn't listening to what was calling me, you know? And sometimes those crucibles, those hard times are such blessings, because it's now like now you have to make a decision, you know, pain creates change. And sometimes we got to experience more pain before we actually act on what we actually want in our lives. That's the unfortunate thing. So that's my answer to how do you know when it's time to shift? It's like, start to listen to back to the sales thing. We're in the awareness stage of things in our lives that are not working for us, or in our businesses that are not working for us. But we're so good at tolerating them, coping through them, coming up with rational stories of why it is the way it is, and I just need to buck up and... But sometimes we need to actually go into the pain and be like, yeah, what about this isn't working for me? How is this not serving me? And really start to listen to it, because it's great information that can inform some real meaningful change we make in our lives and our businesses. Because oftentimes it's the very thing you're avoiding that on the other side of that, if you're just willing to face what you're avoiding, that's where life really happens. That's where the magic is. And so we got to be willing to step into that resistance.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot out of that. The cool thing is, so the answer to what I heard, interestingly enough, was I heard something a little bit different than I think what you even, because, you know, when it's like how to know when to pivot. And what I kind of heard was maybe don't stress as much, because worst case scenario, life in some way or another, to your point, is going to tell you it's time to pivot, right? It might be not the most uncomfortable. And how you can avoid, if you wanted to, life telling you it's time to pivot, listen more closely to the internal voice that says, I'm not doing what I want to do. Like in the case of the rodeo, you wanted to ride that horse and be that, you know, it didn't matter how many times you were going to hit the ground. It's what you wanted to do. The journey was just as fun, maybe, as
absolutely.
Sure, figuring it out and winning was a lot more fun, but you enjoyed the journey to it.
Yeah. Everything about it was cool. I mean, you're behind the chutes, you're around cowboys, you're around like just wild horses. Who cares if I'm hitting the ground? I'm back here doing this. Like, I'm doing what I love. So, yeah, very good. Yeah, that's very true. That was very true for me.
Another thing was I heard, Be So Good They Can't Ignore You, the book. And what was kind of interesting to me is it reminded me of a quote by Steve Martin where he says, I get asked a lot how to make it in showbiz. And he's like, people want answers like,
what agent are you using or what methodology are you using? And he's like, I give them a little bit controversial information, which is be undeniable, be so good that they have to call you.
Yeah.
And
that's another book. It's kind of a memoir. I love that book about Steve Martin. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, people should, like, if you're listening, like, take some lessons from Steve Martin. And I teach leaders all the time. This isn't about what you do or how you do it. So many people are out there obsessing about the right way to do things when it's about who you're being. It's about, like, Steve Martin. If you read that book and read it through the lens of who is he being, he was committed to his craft, and so much so that he was absolutely terrible. Like, he got declined over, like, hit the ground 20 times over and over again, but he stayed in it long enough to find what worked. And there's just something really true, like, universal about that. For those that are willing to let go of the attachment of outcomes and just stay in the process and stay true to what they know they desire for themselves and who they want to be and stay committed to that. I've met so many people that, and me, I'm one of them, who have been told you're not that. I just had coffee with a guy who, he's probably one of the top connectors in Kansas City. He was literally told that he would never be able to do sales or any type of client facing because he's more technical. Like, assessment told him that, and a boss told him that. And now he's one of the best in Kansas City at connecting with people. And it's like, isn't that interesting? And that's my story. I mean, that's all of our stories. And so, yeah, I think, I don't know where I was going with that, but I just think there's something about making an internal commitment. And because we know, and we got to honor those desires, that those, when we find people that we admire, that inspire us, that's some great information for the direction that we're probably being called to move in. But it's going to take work. It's going to take hitting the ground. But that's like, nobody climbs Mount Everest for the hell of it. Like, it's kind of like, let's embrace this struggle of growth, because this is what it's about. And then you get to look back 5 years from today, 10 years from today, and be like, whoa, when you get a sense of your own growth, it's intoxicating. I'm sure I would love to hear your thoughts on that, but it just, once you experience your own personal growth, it's intoxicating. You want more of it. You now realize what you're capable of, and you keep showing up for the next challenge. Yeah.
Well, and it's, it truly is beautiful. You know, there's a reason the show is called Ground Zero Growth. I used to have a difficult time with imposter syndrome. And apparently, if I'm being honest, the church, Christianity, helped me out with that a lot. You know, I kind of had spiritual awakening moments where it was like, you know, if you truly believe that the Son of God died for you, then talking to some multi-billionaire even shouldn't really faze you. But prior to fully internalizing that, there was really there were conversations with people where my internal voice would say, how did you get here? And you really don't deserve to be here. And you should probably leave, you know, find a reason to excuse yourself. And in that moment, I really had no better choice than just to smother that voice, right? That's really all I could do.
Just don't listen to it, because
ignore it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
me too. Yeah. Just don't listen to it.
Well, what was interesting is later, I think you can get through that way, but I don't know if that addresses the problem the same way. So what would happen is there were a couple times where later I was capable in a safe environment of really bringing that feeling back up and looking it in the face and saying, none of that's true. None of that's true. And so to your point about the growth, it really is
a beautiful thing. And I guess there is something to be said about it almost being kind of addictive once you get a real sense of growing up.
Yeah, and probably using the word intoxicating or addictive for sure for some people, and probably me at one point in my life, yes. But now I have a different relationship with struggle than I did years ago. And I'm also realizing it doesn't always have to feel like an uphill battle. Like, life doesn't have to be, success does not have to be so hard. And I think we operate from that story to where we like create heart struggle. We work 80 hours a week because, well, that's what you do. If you own your own business, you don't have freedom. So, but it's like, we get to create the boundaries. So there, that's some of the stuff that I work with clients on. It's like, is that true? Like, when you brought up imposter syndrome, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is, yes, we've been talking about the external struggle, but really at the heart of most of the struggle is our own relationship with that question of, who am I? Who am I really? Am I good enough? And to learning to understand and change your relationship with that voice in your head, that inner critic, because for most people, they're not even aware that that's what's driving their life. And it's just, it's kind of on there a constant, like, well, I don't know if I'm ready for that. Okay, well, then they just believe that is true. And so they don't raise their hand. They don't step into that new arena. But then we start to become aware of, like, oh, gosh, I have this inner critic that's constantly telling me I'm not good enough. That's interesting. Well, I could choose just not to listen to it. And sometimes that's the best you can do. It's just like, well, I just need to turn the volume down on that thing. But I love that you went there, like, actually looking at it, being willing to be with it, like, stay, because most of the time we hear those uncomfortable voices in our head, those uncomfortable emotions, and we race by them very quickly. But if we can learn to be with them and listen and see the truth in it, because oftentimes, like you said, it's like, well, what evidence? That's a powerful question. What evidence do you have that's leading you to believe you're not good enough? Or what evidence do you have that's leading you to believe you don't have enough experience? And almost every time I ask a client that, because I spend a lot of time working with executives in these types of conversations, very personal and intimate, and 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, there is more evidence to the contrary. If we actually look at the evidence says, like, well, hell yeah, you're good enough. Hell yeah, you've got enough experience. You kidding? And they're like, oh, wow, yeah, I guess I do. I guess it's just not true. So then it's like, well, where does that voice come from then? And that's where it's like, well, it comes from what we are taught oftentimes as a young, of growing up through life. We were taught how to be. We were taught what was acceptable, what wasn't acceptable. And that kind of that program lives out through adulthood, unless we start to realize what's really going on and how it's serving us or not serving us. So I love that you went there, because that's a lot of the deeper work that absolutely is necessary if we want to grow beyond what we think is possible. Because what we think is possible oftentimes is just us looking in the rearview mirror and projecting it into the future. And usually success in business and life deserves a different way of being. Like, I like that word being, because when you change who you're being, in other words, how you see and relate to the world and your circumstances, it changes how you show up and meet them. And that's really the name of the game, especially in entrepreneurship and business and growth. We have to really look and go inwardly and ask ourselves, what specifically about who I'm being, maybe I've outgrown, or maybe it's no longer working for me. It's time to let it go. Yeah.
And I heard this quote today. It's the first time I've heard it, but it's going to stick with me. And it was everything you want is outside of your comfort zone, if only just a little bit, because if it was inside your comfort zone, you'd already have it. And I also loved what you said with regards to heroes. I don't think it's childish. We have an entire mantra over here, for lack of, or slip mottos, whatever you want to call it. It's what we started with before I realized we needed a why and core values. And it's, if we've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Actually, we'll have to swing back to that, because that's kind of one of our last questions. I'm kind of leading the witness a little bit. But it's, We'll swing back on that one. That's a good one. But
yeah.
So you got into sales and then you got demoted all of a sudden, and you're not the VP of sales. It sounds like you're probably back to the kind of traditional sales seat position. What had you decide to transition out of that? What was kind of the key trigger of like leading up to your escape? I call it plotting your escape. When did you start plotting and why? And
yeah,
what did that look like?
Yeah, it's weird because this is a company I didn't, 10 years, a decade. And you know, I don't know, I think a lot of people can relate to this, but when you start with a small company, a startup type company, and you're with them kind of since the beginning, and you watch them grow. Yeah, it's not the same relationship as an owner has for sure. Like, but for me, it felt like I helped build this company, and a lot of my identity was tied into the company and the vision and the values and all of what we stood for. And then to find out that I no longer had a seat at the table, you know, like I had to get through some of just the personal ego identity crisis. It was like, well, then who the hell am I then? Like, what? Why do I matter? If like, what am I? I'm just a sales guy, you know. So I had a lot of frustration and anger, not necessarily towards anybody. It was just kind of a soup of crap for a while. So I had to filter through that. And angry. And then it's like, okay, well, F them. Like I have a pattern. Whenever somebody would reject me, I'm like, F you. And then I go and I think I submitted a few resumes for VP of sales, a few, but it never felt right. And it was the whole time I was like, I don't even like this. I don't, why am I doing this? You know? And so I had a friend, a good friend. I'd worked with him, and he basically said, Zach, why don't you just chill the F out and just let yourself settle? Like, you can do sales, just do it. Like, take your foot off the gas and just allow what wants to happen to happen. That was key for me. I didn't want to hear it. Initially, I was like, no, fuck F that. That's not me. But I did that. And I just took a year and I just settled into doing my job and doing it great, but not investing my every ounce of my being in it. And that's when I made a fundamental decision. Like, I'm going to do this sales thing. And I'm going to build a coaching business. And so like my evenings, early mornings, I'd be coaching one-on-one with other executives. Like I was working with the CEO of another company, and then my day job was doing sales. And the more I did that, things just started to like become clear. And ultimately I was at a trade show for solar panels in the solar industry, which I didn't know anything about solar panels, but I'm like, well, they might need logistics. So I'm out in like Los Angeles at this trade show for solar panels, walking from booth to booth to booth all day. And I'll never forget, I'm walking back to the hotel room and just this like something seized me. Like I had this lump in my throat, I started like wanting to cry. Like just like, it was just like this well up of emotion. And I just remember kind of whispering to myself, like, I don't want to effing do this shit anymore. You know, sorry if I just dropped the cuss word.
Hey,
but
no. Like, I just, it just it, was like my cursing whole, is fine.
My whole body was like, I am effing done with, I don't want to do this anymore. And I remember just like going up to my hotel room, calling my wife and like, I don't want to do this. Like, I'm confiding in her what's going on. And it just kind of was like a dam broke. And that whole night, like I was supposed to go to some networking event and I skipped it. I didn't even go back to the trade show the next 2 days. And I even feel like I'm letting my company down. Like that was hard for me. That was hard for me because I'm loyal. I'm like, but I just needed that time for me to like, what the F do you want to do, Zach? Like, I knew the answer the whole time. It was all over the pages of my journal for like the last 2 years. I'd been writing about it, complaining about it. You know how you complain about life? Like, God, if I could just do, well, the answer is right there in front of you. You know, it's just that having the courage to step out on faith and trusting yourself, and the pain had to amp up. And that was I said pain creates change, because that was the moment where the pain became loud enough. It's like, you know what? I need to make a change. And that's just, and nothing changed overnight. Nothing changed the next day. I didn't quit my job. I stayed at it, but something was changing in me, you know, and to where my energy was starting to go in a different direction. And I believe, and this is where it sounds a little wooey, but I just believe I started attracting, because of who I was being, I was attracting new opportunities. And along the way, a guy I went to college, he reached out. He saw what I was doing on LinkedIn because I was out there writing blog posts and just, you know, putting myself out there. And come to find out, they had a need. They needed a leadership coach internally at their organization. And before I know it, he's recruiting me over dinner to come work for him as a leadership coach. And it's just like, and people ask me, how did you go from A to Z? It's like, I have no clue. I didn't follow a plan, and I don't have a plan. All I know is I started listening to what wanted to happen, and I made some internal commitments to myself to where it's like, okay, I'm going in this direction. And if it's not aligned with that direction, I'm going to say no. So for the first time in my career, I'm a sales guy now. Well, I still had a reputation for being a fixer and going into tough situations and solving problems. And I remember we were building a warehouse and they needed some help in the operations to lay down some processes and, you know, opportunity. And I told them no. I'm like, no. Because I started to know, like, you know what? I want to develop people. I want to be a coach. I want to go in this direction. And I'm like, that's not that. But the old Zach would have said, absolute yes. I was a yes man, not a good soldier. Like, whatever you say jump, I say hell high. But now for the first time, I'm like, no, that actually doesn't align with what is most important to me. So I'm going to say no. And that was the scariest thing to kind of, because now I'm starting to cut my own path. And that, I think that's where true leadership really begins, because that's where we have all our gravitas. When we stop being so apologetic about things and start actually being a stand for who we are and who we're not. That was a little bit of a rant, but it's important to me.
That's a good one.
Yeah. It's something that it's important to learn to trust yourself and listen to your own internal voice. Ralph Waldo Emerson calls it self-reliance. And the word self-reliance, you know, it's interesting because in America, we think of rugged individualism. And I've actually studied Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay on self-reliance, and it's not rugged individualism. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about learning to trust your own internal voice, your own internal inspiration, learning to trust it and stop worrying about what other people think and actually step out on faith and be you, full out, full stop. And I get to spend my time and energy doing now. I help people do that in their businesses and do that in their leadership roles, because that's really what our companies want from us, that they need that from us.
When I think to your point, that's when growth becomes easier. That's when I think,
yeah,
it's tricky, because on one hand, I still have this mentality that like growth is going to hurt a little bit, growing pains and whatnot, this, that, and the other. But what I find is the more I talk to, you know, amazing folks like you, and the more I overlay it with personality tests, everybody's kind of got their favorite. And the more people kind of tell me what it is that personality test is telling me. Like, I had a friend, Lindsay, she was on the podcast, and she said something really so impactful. And it was basically, you like the limelight. Mm-hmm. And I told myself for forever, I don't like the limelight. I'm not meant for the limelight. I'm the guy behind the curtains. I'm the Wizard of Oz. I pull the levers and magic happens, and I don't like the limelight. And when she said that, it was freeing and interesting, because it was like, I do. But then it was also permission, right? Yeah. To do something that people probably want anyway, or I definitely wanted. And what was that internal voice to begin with that was like, you don't like the limelight and you can't speak or host a podcast or, you know, all these things? And it's interesting, because it's like, I couldn't even necessarily tell you where that came from. I don't think. Like, to your point, it's like you were raised with it. Maybe. I don't see why not. But I also couldn't point to a specific instance where mom or dad, I mean, they were always supportive of like dramas and plays. Yeah. And I just think for some reason it took, I don't know, 30 some odd years before it was like, yeah, I think I do. Yeah. And how freeing is that to just jump out and, hello, everybody, I'm here.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you can like it or hate it, but I'm me and I'm here.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I really resonate with what you're saying because I see myself in some of what you just shared. It's true for me too. And yeah, I think it's, we're so dialed in on what other people think. And there's reasons for that. And yet when you get into midlife, right? And I think it does become easier because you've maybe achieved a level of success and you've been down those roads. You're like, I know where that leads. And the choices become a little clearer, where when you're in your 20s, you don't know. You know, you're just trying to impress people and get noticed so you get the promotions. And I think that is kind of the mentality.
You discovered alcohol for the first time.
I mean, that's right?
A priority.
But it is like the way you get ahead in life is you got to get promoted. You got to get noticed. And so if you're smart, you're like, you're playing other people's game. Like, what's the, you know, and that was the trap I fell into, and I got really good at it. But then I got further and further and further away from, I wasn't even listening or even aware of what I wanted. And most people aren't. Most people, when I ask the question, what do you really want? What do you see for your future? What would you love to create? If you could create anything in your life, I don't know is the answer I most often hear, which is crazy, right? But it's a hard question because I think we're just taught to not key into our own self because we call it selfishness. And we've all been taught not to be selfish. And I think it's BS. Like, I think capital S selfishness is first, like, that's the self-reliance. And I grew up in you know, the Christian church, and I think I took on this idea of humility. And so, like, there is this kind of like, I don't matter. I need to be selfless. But what I've learned
maybe
is, like,
that's where.
I think that
maybe
was a,
that's
a,
where
has a huge
the
influence.
Limelight.
Yeah. And even the word limelight, when you
crazy
say that,
is I don't. Yeah,
limelight sounds
crazy,
like a negative connotation.
It does. It does. Yeah. And what's interesting is I don't think maybe we get deeper than we want to hear, but I don't think that's biblical. I don't know where that comes from. And I'll agree with you that that does tend to be perpetuated by the church. It's the take up your cross and follow me.
Yeah.
But I think we completely discount the, I mean, is that not, I mean, pardon me, and I'm not trying to be offensive to anybody, but is that not limelight? I mean, the guy came down, spoke in front of masses of people, and he did it the way he wanted to do it. It didn't follow any sort of model. In fact, oftentimes when a model was attempted to be forced on him, he would switch things up. Like, I'm going to make this guy see by shoving mud in his eye, but the kid I'm going to heal by saying, boom, he's healed. And then on the cross in front of everybody. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying there isn't a tremendous amount of humility involved in being beaten to death. I'm just saying that this notion that we can't enjoy the pulpit is, I don't think that's Christian.
Yeah. Yes. And I want to say something on this word humility, because I've worked with a lot of coaches and mentors in my life, and I don't know how you don't get to new levels without outside perspective. And one of the guys that's had a lot of impact on me, his name's Bo Eason, and he helped me see and change my relationship with humility. Because when your butt's at the bottom of a new mountain, so starting a business, speaking behind a pulpit, your behind is on the line. Like, you're out and exposed in front of the world. Talk about the most humble position you could be in, because believe you me, you get shot, things thrown at you, you get people, like, you are totally vulnerable and exposed, and you have no other choice but to be humble. You know, it's just like when you're in that arena, you're humble because you realize it's like, this is so hard. And this, you know, like, I don't know if you know what I'm, if I'm articulating this clear enough, but.
No, I know exactly what you mean. It's that moment in your presentation when everything fails, all the technology just goes kaput, or that moment when you lose your script, or that moment when the guest speaker doesn't show up or whatever, you know, what's interesting to me is at some point, I couldn't quite tell you when or where. It's not even humility in the same way. It's just you're so comfortable in your own skin that it's like life happened. It's like, you know, hey, you said that thing wrong, or you misspelled that tweet, or you, and you're like, I'm not an English major, and transparently, folks, I'm not that great at math either.
Yeah, that's very like you're being very humble right there. Like, I think that's humility. What you're doing right there is where you kind of get rid of the ego. Like, the ego is the thing that always needs to be great and perfect and right. And the opposite of ego is more humble, where there's just a detachment. There's just a, I don't need any certain outcome. I don't need to be great. I don't need to succeed. Or like, it's just about like, I'm just in this moment. And I think that's humility. I think, because you're right. Like, just the other week, I did a talk and I've totally lost my place. And it was weird. And I had to, like, I sometimes walk around the audience. So I was like, I felt like a mile away from my notes. I'm like, oh crap. Like, I don't know where I'm going next. My notes are about 100 yards back on stage and I'm in the middle of this room of 250 people. And so I had to just like, 1 second, you know, and I had to walk all the way back to stage and somebody made a comment, like, you know, I thought that was kind of
unprofessional.
You know, the unprofessional. Yeah. And
that's,
you know, I didn't get defensive. I'm like, yeah, I could see that. And but you know what? I knew I was doing my best in that moment. And
yeah,
and I got off that call where the old me would have just like brooded over that and beat myself up and almost talked myself out of it. Maybe I ain't a speaker. Maybe I should quit. You know, and I just kind of like, it was like water off a duck's back. Humble though, in the fact that it's like, you know what? What caused that to happen? Where might I be able to rehearse a little bit more, work a little bit harder so I'm a little more free to not feel so attached to my notes? So I took the lesson, but because I didn't have all the ego involved, I could be humble and receive it and then let it go. And I think that's humility. And like an entrepreneur or a business owner, when you're outside of that comfort zone, yeah, you're going to hit the ground. You're just going to hit the ground. Being in the arena is being like almost bringing some acceptance around failure. And like, it's okay. It's okay that I hit the ground because I know I can get back up. I can dust myself off, get back on the horse. That's what growth is. And it takes a lot of humility, but that's humility.
Actually, that's a perfect example because I just did an I was going to say somebody, there was a comment on like a Facebook a creators group and they were like, hey, I have a lot of ums and uhs in my podcast. How do I get rid of those? And it was kind of interesting because I commented and I was like, you know, it's funny. I still have some ums and uhs in mine too, but they sound a lot more confident now because I've kind of decided that I don't. There are certain, I definitely, when I first started, I had a lot more, and I did, I was like, I want to cut down on that a decent bit. But what I noticed was there's this happy medium between I'm either engaged with Zach and we're having a real conversation, and then there's going to be some pauses and there's going to be some filler words, or, and I'm try to strike that happy medium, because the other side of it is it's like I'm almost not listening to you. I'm waiting for phrases I can pick up on, so that way I'm reducing silence as much as possible. And then what's interesting, there's AI now that'll cut it out, but then the whole conversation sounds like a bunch of robots talking.
Yeah.
So, and I don't want that, because at the end of the day, I want, you know, I've gotten a little bit emotional a couple times because we've hit a level of conversational discourse where we're not just talking. we're really discussing the inner psyche and how people tick. And to your point, to jump back a little bit, your point about what people want, I really believe this. I think one of the more difficult things to discover with regards to internal psyche is exactly what you want. And I think if anybody can manage to put in the words in detail what they want and what that will take to achieve, I have little doubt that the universe or God is going to bring that to you, because all you have to do is start saying, this is what I want. And it doesn't matter. Like, there's probably plenty of people out there that are like, I want to be a millionaire, or I want to be a 10 millionaire or a billionaire. It's like, okay, now we need to work backwards from that. Are you aware of the sacrifice, pain, and effort and growth involved in bringing that about? Because if you truly want that, I have little doubt that you can achieve that. You just have to really want that. And then what's kind of interesting is, in the pursuit of that want, sometimes we discover that's not what we wanted at all. And then we need to transition. The sales, really, right? You know, through the pursuit, is it safe to say through the pursuit of that career, you got to a point of like, this isn't really what I want?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that question of what do I want, as if we think it's a thing outside. And sometimes it is. Sometimes it's just crystal clear. Like, I want to be a best-selling author, you know, and I want but I'm not so sure that that's has to be the level of clarity, because I think it's when we ask the question, what do we want? I think it's a question more of a question of being than any destination. Mm. Because when we start looking at our core values and we start looking at like what lights us up, there's this quote by Howard Thurman. I think his name's Howard Thurman. And I think I have the quote in my head. It's one of my favorite quotes. Don't ask the world what it needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And that quote, I think, is really, what do you want? I want to be awake. I want to be alive. I want to be in the arena of my own life. And I realize I don't actually know exactly what that looks like. I know it when I'm not in the arena. I know it when I'm in the grandstands looking down. And so it's learning to just continue to lean into resistance and play a bigger game and kind of be open to where life takes you. Something else I've really learning to do is like, what is life asking of me? Instead of like, what do I want? I think you have to clean up a little bit of the peer pressure and what I think people want from me, but really like asking like, what is wanting to happen right now in my business? But you have to bring yourself into the equation. It's not like, what do they want? It's like, what is wanting to happen? Let's look at my kids, my three daughters and my wife and my friends and all of that, my vocation, what's working, what's not working. And then kind of just asking what wants to happen given all of this. And we usually have a pretty good sense about it. But it's not an intellectual question. It's more of a being more present and more aware of like, where's this thing wanting to go? And starting to honor that and listen to it too. Kind of letting go of the outcome a little bit more. I don't know. That one's a little fresh. So I don't know if that's making sense at all, but that's been important to me.
So like one thing that happened to me early on, oh man, we'll get kind of deep. I can do it at a high level, but so I came into this, you know, Jordan Peterson calls it your North Star. Mm, and it was like, what's your North Star? What's your destination? What are you heading towards? And to your point of it, it doesn't have to be a destination. It could be a state of being. And I think you're exactly right. I think you put up something and it's primordial. It's rough around the edges. So mine was, I want to be a business owner. And I specifically picked business owner and not entrepreneur because I had internal opinions on what an entrepreneur was versus what a business owner was, which was important because this wasn't the external world's opinion on what an entrepreneur versus a business owner was. This was my own internal opinion on what the differentiation between those definitions were. And that's like, what's a business owner? But that's what it started. I want to be a business owner. What's a business owner? Somebody I would want to work for, somebody I would want to hire as a client, somebody I would want to work with. And then, you know, as things started progressing, I prioritized my business and my marriage suffered. And so then I realized, oh, I need to be a husband and a business owner. And then I had a daughter and I was like, oh, wow, okay. I need to be a husband, father, business owner. And then I became saved, born again, came back to the church, whatever you want to call it. I'm like, okay, I need to be a man of faith, a husband, a father, a business owner. And under each of those umbrellas, I have in my mind, in my internal, what those need to look like. And it's a series of definitions. It's just, and so I don't know, to your point, I don't know how much sense that does or doesn't yeah. make, but that's my personal brand, by the way, if anybody wants to know. If yeah. I'm not a man of faith, husband, father, and business owner in that order, I'm not living up to my North Star.
Yeah, and the word attachment, like I do a weekly email, just kind of, I call it Saddle Up Digest. And people have said they appreciate how it's very self-reflective. So I'm just sharing kind of my own journey. And something that I'm realizing is whenever I become attached. So I think this is when we get clear on what we want and we become attached to that thing, being a business owner. Now, all of a sudden, everything that's not that suffers. And so there's something about wanting something and desiring it without attachment. And there's like a paradox. It's like wanting it and also being okay not having it simultaneously. That sounds strange to wrap your mind around, but there's something about we just need direction. We need something like a lighthouse kind of guiding us, telling us next steps, inspiring our action. I call this eyes on the bronc. You know, we need a bronc that demands something of us, that because it's not a question of how, it's a question of what is it that I desire to create? What is it that I want? And then letting it inspire our next steps. It's a place to come from, not a place to get to. We need that direction, but we don't have to let it consume us with all that attachment, needing it to happen and gripping the wheel tight to where we close off all the life that's going on around us, like our family, our spouses, our partners, faith, all of those things. We get tunnel vision.
Well, and I feel like Harry, I really liked this because when Harry achieved the long distance running record for his school, it was interesting because, and I talked about how he started in basketball, realized that wasn't his thing, long distance running. I asked him, it was like, so it's my understanding that first dream was to compete in athletics and succeed, and it didn't matter which sport. And I asked him, were you aware that that was the dream, that it didn't matter which sport? And at the time, he wasn't. When he started in basketball, he probably thought it was basketball. And then when he started in running, it was running. But he wasn't aware that the bigger picture was just that he wanted to compete with himself and others at a level and be successful. And so to your point, we can't have the blinders on so much that we lose track of the fact that we're enjoying or not enjoying it.
Yes.
Right? If it becomes solely we need this thing at all costs, we're going to miss so much.
And I think I get a little annoyed. So there is a way of thinking where it takes discipline, persistence, just grind, like that's how success happens. And Grant Cardone is somebody, if you're familiar with him, like just go grind. And like
he's a pretty good one for this.
Yeah, but I think first and foremost I want to, for the most part, really enjoy what I'm doing day in and day out. And if I don't, I need to look at it. And I think sometimes that success thinking of discipline, it's just like, well, you got to make sacrifices. Well, there's people that make sacrifices for a whole decade and then they get to the destination and they don't even, it wasn't what they thought it was. So I'm like, I'm not going to live my life that way. The whole life is the journey. We might get to the I don't know if you've ever achieved a milestone in your business or gotten an award that you've been wanted to get, like the Super Bowl. What happens the next day? You go back to work. You go back to the gym. Like, all right, well, now what? I guess we'll go home, you know? So it's like a moment. And now we're back into it. So it's like, why the hell would you not build a life and a business that you enjoy more often than not? This grind and sacrifice, I think it's, I don't listen to it. I just throw it aside. I'm like, no, like if we're not enjoying it, we need to take a hard look at it, because there's a multitude of ways of getting there. We need to really look at how you get there, because it needs to serve you. It needs to light you up. And otherwise, good luck with that. That's going to be tough. I don't know what you're hearing and all that. I would love to hear your opinion, like, because you're in it. I know you're in the arena. You're building a business. How does that land for
you? To your point, I'm the type of personality where I don't even let myself. Like, if I achieve that amazing goal, I am immediately, all right, what's the next one? And normally, it's so bad. Historically, I've even been disappointed in myself for achieving the goal. Like, my opinion is a goal that you achieve wasn't high enough.
Right. That was too easy. I should have. Right.
Yeah.
Do you see the ridiculousness in all of that, though? Like, the
100,
the
insanity? So ridiculous. Yeah. And then you don't achieve the goal, right? So you're upset about yourself for not achieving the goal. But then if you do achieve the goal, you're upset at yourself for not setting the goal high enough. And it's funny, because I used to hold this opinion. It's like, well, if you set the goal high enough and you fall a little short, then, you know, you're still, like, if you shot for the moon, but you hit a star along the way, you know, and it's a crazy analogy, but you get the idea. Like, you've done something not everyone else. I mean, there's plenty of people that would look and say, awesome. But then again, if you let that internal voice win out, the negative one, I should say, if you still have one, hopefully not, you end up in this place where you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah. And I still have one, by the way, that negative voice.
Mine's getting better. I'll give credit to Sandler, actually. I've been a little surprised. It's a sales training program. And one of the things they had me do was they made me reframe my self-limiting beliefs. There were two voices that, and they made me say it like I was saying it to other people.
Yeah, that's good.
And the ridiculousness comes out.
Yep.
When you are talking to somebody with the passion and intensity that you talk to yourself, and that other person is like, you talk to yourself like that?
Yeah.
Holy cow, man. Mine says, I need to get better at time management.
We do this. I do this event downtown Kansas City at the Crossroads Hotel. And one of the exercises we do really helps shine a light on what you're describing. And it's like a moment of just it's everybody's favorite exercise. We do it all the time because it just helps normalize where we once felt completely alone. Like, I guess I've just got when you start to see, like, oh, we all have this inner voice in our, you know, this inner critic. Everybody walks around with some sort of story of I'm not good enough. Everybody. And we always feel so isolated and kind of afraid and ashamed of it. And everybody, that so normalizing it, but then it doesn't go away. Like, the more we try to resist that voice, the more it persists, the louder it gets, the more we try to change it. And some of those exercises you're describing are powerful. At the same time, it's like, how do we turn up the volume on the other part of us that does know what it wants, that does, you know, there's kind of two, you know, the devil and the angel on the shoulder. It's kind of like that, I guess. And what are we listening to? Are we listening to that part, our true character and our values? Are we coming from that place? Are we coming from fear? Are we coming from fear? And that's where, when you start to draw that distinction, it starts to become kind of a compass, a true north, like we were talking about earlier, to kind of guides everything, guides our behavior, our decisions, our actions, our way of thinking. what we give credence to and what we don't give credence to in our thinking. Because some of it's complete baloney and we just need to set it aside because it's not serving us.
And I think fear sometimes can be an ally. If you and that's an interesting thing because it's definitely on the negative spectrum. But what's interesting to me is I think a lot of times it shines a light on something you need to do.
Yes.
I'm afraid to fall off the horse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's one of my favorite authors is Stephen Pressfield, and he wrote a book called The War of Art. Have you heard of it? So in this book, he introduces this character that's plays a part in all of our lives. We'll call it more of a villain, and it's the villain of resistance with a capital R. And so he says that the bigger the dream, the bigger the resistance. So he kind of uses this metaphor of a tree. Bigger the tree, bigger the shadow that that tree casts. And so whenever we feel that fear, also known as resistance, it's an indicator of what we desire. It's actually the indicator of the direction we need to go. Because that is where the dream is also where the resistance is. Where the desires are, the desires that really light us up and are going to yield the most fruit for us in our lives, like there's a direct correlation with that and the resistance. And so learning to change your relationship with, like, now I get really uncomfortable when I'm not experiencing resistance. It's like, oh, shit, I lose my bearing. I lose, like, where am I going? Because usually when the resistance is loud, it's like, okay, I'm right where I need to be. Here we go. Game on. I'm in it. I'm on the path of growth. But when that goes away, I get a little uncomfortable. It's like, okay, I don't have a... that's when I get confused. That's when I get overwhelmed. And
it's funny, I've had the similar thing with fear. I've had the similar thing with fear. You know, absolute lack of fear. At least, I mean, you know, obviously there's going to be fear, like getting bit by a venomous snake is a legitimate, decent, and dying. That's a decent fear. But fear with regards to, like, I'm scared to fire a client or I'm scared to, you know, whatever it is, absence of it, I don't know what the next problem is I need to solve. But
yeah,
let's start to kind of wrap up here. We could keep going. We might have to do a version two. So what is there anything we missed kind of to start? And I'll give you an opportunity to plug some things. But I want to make sure I've given you credit to talk about anything in particular. I think did we miss anything on the speaking element or the leadership element?
No, we covered a lot of ground. I don't need to pile on to what we've already covered. I really appreciate your being able to bounce stuff off. Yeah, you're great at this. And
Thank you.
a closing message on my part is I really believe life happens in the arena. And a lot of people, burnout is, I'm sick and tired of hearing that word, even though we all know the feeling, me too. I've just chosen to be like, I'm not burnout, I'm bored. You're not burnout, you're bored. It's a different side of the same coin, like if we want to get down to it. And so life happens in the arena. Like, we need to learn to embrace struggle. The world right now is saying we need to manage our mental health and get rid of our anxiety and our stress. And frankly, I think it's distracting us from living our best lives. We need to be willing to invite all of that along for the ride because it's part of it. And when you can just be with all those things, life really starts happening. And when you're in the arena. So I just want to leave people with that. It's an important thing for me. It served me in my life. It served my clients, and hopefully it serves your listeners.
So the saying we have around here, if we've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. Reference to Isaac Newton, who brought it from a Greek priest, I think, actually, who brought it from a Greek mythology. It goes way back. It's kind of fun in the essence of the term. Who's been a giant in your life that you'd like to pay homage to in this moment?
There's too many that come to my mind. It's funny because I growing up, I tell a lot of personal stories when I do my keynotes, and the main character in this story that is my coach, Bruce. You know, he taught me how to team rope. He helped me get, because mom and dad, like, they ran a small town grocery store. They weren't cowboys. Mom was into horses. We started, she bought me my first horse, a Shetland pony named Princess, you know, but she got me into it. But then Bruce was the one that really supported me and kind of leading me down this path. And yeah, he'd probably be somebody that in the moment I didn't realize it, but looking back, like, dang, he had so much influence on who I became. And then my mom too. Gotta give props to mom. Like, she always was the one that put me in those arenas. Like, gosh, I've had people tell me, like, everybody needs a Zach mom, somebody who just signs them up and puts them in the arena of their own, you know, and my mom did that for me time and time again.
And the other one was, what's a principle you've kind of found true time and time again? Maybe a pithy saying that for some reason for you, you've just found to be true over and over again.
Raise high and lift keeps coming to my mind. It's a metaphor I share in my talks, but it's just a learn to, like, everything in us is going to want to contract and be small and play it safe and grip it tight. You know, that we've been talking about this whole podcast interview, like, that's normal. And we can choose to listen to it or not listen to it. And we need to learn to do the opposite, to really kind of tap into that expansiveness and letting go of control and trusting ourselves, being unapologetic. And in the rodeo, that's race high and lift. It's where you reach with your feet, you expose yourself. Like, that's how you, like, if you watch these bronc riders, just how they expand their body on these broncs. And it's beautiful to see. But all of that is flying in the face of every fear-based response of curling up in a ball and just trying to, and it's like learning to go the opposite direction, to step into that resistance. I've lived my life by that. I want to teach my daughters that, because I think that's where the magic of life is found.
So raise high and lift. I'm still trying to, not having been a rodeo rider, I'm still, that's when you stand up on the stirrups and lift the hand over the head?
Yeah.
So, is that what that is?
Yeah. It's, I realize, like, I'm on a podcast, usually I'm on stage and I use my body to show it, but, like, picture yourself on a bronc and you've got a rein in your left hand and the other hand is free. You can't reach down. You can't reach, hold on to the horn of the saddle. It's free. It's in the air. Well, when you're on a bronc and that thing's kicking and bucking, like, all, everything in you wants to curl up into a ball, like constrict, like, you know, like roll up into a ball, pull your arm close to you. You're really small and you have to go against that fear and actually throw that hand out. Instead of pulling on the rein, you have to lift. So you have to use a weaker part of your body and lift that rein in the air, throw your free hand up in the air, and throw your feet over the shoulder of those horses. It's just like everything against what you want to do. Like, everything in you, it's counterintuitive. Everything in you wants to just be small, but it's learning to go the opposite. So it's a physicality thing. It's easier to show if we're in person, but hopefully I'm describing it well enough.
So with that, is there any upcoming speeches or anything you'd like to plug? How can people connect with Zach Arend?
Well, on April 4th, I'm hosting my next Saddle Up Live event. Last year we did it. It was sold out. No more than 20 people are in attendance. And it's just a powerful full day for leaders and their teams to really look at how they're showing up in their day-to-day and where the opportunities might be for them to really look at who they're being so that they can influence the outcomes around them, because that's where it always begins. And the whole day is set aside for that. We've got lunch catered in, cocktails, networking at the end of the day. So anybody interested in that, they can go to www.zacharend.com/saddle-up or go on LinkedIn. You're going to find me on LinkedIn. You'll see me talking about it. But yeah, join us on April 4th.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for being on, Zach.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. It was a pleasure.
And it says stopping. We're out. All right. Something went wrong. Well, that's not what you want to see.
Hello, everybody. I wanted to thank you for listening to today's episode. It's such a blessing to be able to interview some such fantastic individuals. If you're interested in listening to more, we look to post every Thursday at 10 a.m. You can find us on YouTube, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day.